Chapter 10. They listened to the call on speakerphone. Jake politely asked Al to leave the office until the call was over as Clara rushed to the graphics department to get Brian. As Mrs. Emerson went over the reason for her call, Jake, Brian, and Clara all huddled around the phone in the graphics department. For one very tense moment, it felt as if the air had been sucked out of the room. They stared at the phone in disbelief. Brian actually noticed that Jake's face had gone a sickly shade of white. Brian was overwhelmed with the sense that he was sitting in the principal's office, as he had done frequently in high school.
3 weeks ago, our offices were presented with a case concerning a t-shirt design you created and sold. The customer was a fraternity at Foster College in your area. The design severely infringed upon two separate Disney copyrights in a lewd manner. Do you recall this design?
Jake and Brian shared a look that made Clara uneasy. The look on Brian's face made her wonder if he was actually going to be physically ill with the news. He looked like he might be on the verge of throwing up.
Yes, Jake croaked.
He knew it would be useless to deny it. In the back of his head, he hoped that this call was some cruel joke by someone they knew, but his heart knew it was not the case. He cursed himself and Brian as well for having been so stupid. Had they seriously been so determined to succeed in the beginning that they had overlooked something as obvious as copyright infringement? He recalled the order in his mind, an order placed by that frat kid who had waited until the last minute to order shirts. They had been so eager to please him, so eager to get that first big order, and now, here was the price they had to pay.
"If you don't mind me asking," Brian said, sounding skeptical but deflated, "how did you come across our design?"
"I'm not at liberty to reveal that information," she said, "but a Disney representative saw the design and approached our department. Disney takes copyright infringement very seriously. It is my duty to inform you that our lawyers have already started making a case against your company for copyright infringement in regards to the characters of Minnie Mouse and Alice from Alice in Wonderland properties."
"What?" Brian said, nearly shouting. "Just like that? Don't we even get a chance to—"
Jake shook his head and held a hand up, silencing him.
"If you wish to do so, you can file an appeal," Mrs. Emerson went on. "It usually does no good, but is an option available to you. Would you like the information necessary to do so?"
"Yes,"
Jake said. As he reached for a pen, he saw that his hand was shaking. He took down the information, and the call ended with Mrs. Emerson filling them in on how the rest of the process would go. Absolutely none of what she described worked in their favor, and with each new bit of information, Jake and Brian both felt a vice tightening around their necks and the business they had created. Meanwhile, Clara watched on as if she were on the side of the road and watching a car accident that she was helpless to stop. When Brian hit the end call button on the desk phone, he slammed his hand down on the desk.
"Shit!"
he said, and then he looked to Jake pleadingly.
Tell me this isn't as bad as it sounds. Please!"
Jake ran a shaky hand through his hair and shook his head.
"I think it's as bad as it sounds. Maybe worse."
"I hate to drive another nail in," Clara said, "but we learn about this in one of my marketing classes. There are some companies that are absolutely lethal when it comes to copyright infringement. Disney is one of the worst. What the hell kind of design did you make?"
"Was Emmy and Alice pole dancing," Brian said as if embarrassed. "It was her first big order."
He then grinned and added,
"Remember, Jake? That worried frat boy who didn't have any other options?"
"Yeah, I remember."
And very suddenly, he grew angry at the young man. Jake pulled the file up on his computer and the three of them looked at it. For all intents and purposes, it was well done and pretty clever. When they created it, the frat kid was ecstatic and Jake was thrilled to add it to his personal portfolio. It was exactly what the customer had asked for, but was a foolproof example of copyright infringement.
"How did we not think of that?" Brian asked. "How did we miss that?"
"We were too worried about getting the business going," Jake said. "It's as simple as that. We were taking anything that came our way."
"Damn, guys," Clara said. "This could be really bad, as in I should be looking for another job bad. You think?"
"There's no way to know yet," Jake said. "I guess we need to start looking for a lawyer, huh?"
And just like that, one of the most promising weeks in fine print short history became its most terrifying. They met with a lawyer the following day. Jake and Brian invited Clara to tag along, as she was now a large part of their success, but she declined. They both understood, if they had the choice, they wouldn't have wanted to be there either. Still, she wished them her best and even sounded like she had been crying over the ordeal. The lawyer they chose was an older man by the name of David Farson.
They had chosen because he had some experience in copyright lawsuits and seemed to be a no-nonsense guy when they spoke to him on the phone. He actually sounded angry about the fact that a large corporation was so ruthlessly trying to kill off a small business. He had that same attitude as Jake and Brian sat across from him in his large office. He reclined back in his seat, seeming relaxed and at home behind his huge desk. Even as he delivered the bad news, he seemed carefree. And the fact that he had seemed disgruntled over the severity of the situation made them both feel as if they truly did have David Farson in their corner.
"So I looked at the design you sent me," Farson said. "I hate to say it, but that is a pretty solid case. Besides that, it's Disney we're talking about. If they have to, they'll throw enough money at this until it's all wrapped up. In some instances, infringement cases can be finagled to some degree. But I'm going to tell you, boys, this design is blatant infringement. And the fact that you made money off of it is bad. But the fact that it was used on t-shirts that promoted a college event that also made money from the fraternity in question, well, that makes it very bad. With the out-and-out infringement of the design and the money made on it, there's not much I can do. All I can do at this point is call up their copyright department, speak to some of their lawyers, and hope I can arrange for them to allow you to settle out of court. It's the best option at this point. Because of the nature of the design and the obvious way you infringed upon their intellectual properties, I doubt I can even get granted an appeal. But of course, it never hurts to try."
"And what happens if we settle out of court?" Brian asked.
"That means you avoid court, court costs, and the extended period of time this hassle will follow you. It also won't do as much visible broad damage to your business if you manage to survive this. These things can sometimes take years."
"And you think that's our best bet?"
"Unfortunately, yes," Farson said. "I'll plead the hell out of your case, believe me. I'll say you are young entrepreneurs that got caught up in the competitive nature of the small business environment and simply didn't think rationally. Things like that. But in my experience, that does very little good. So I'd be prepared to pay up out of court." "How much are we talking?" Jake asked, almost in a whisper.
"It's hard to say,"
Farson said apologetically, "especially with a huge company like Disney. But it's likely going to be six figures, if I had to guess. Rarely have I seen it lower than that." "Oh, my God," Jake said. For the rest of the meeting, with Farson and even the ride back to Fine Print, Jake said little. That was fine with Brian. Every time he opened his mouth to speak, he was afraid he'd vomit. The car was like a tomb on the way back to the shop, and they rode along in silence.